Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. For nearly two decades, economic and social policy analyst John Quinterno has been writing about important public policy matters, including labor markets, workforce development, economic development, social insurance, and post-secondary education. Recently, however, it's been Quinterno's expertise in monitoring and analyzing North Carolina's troubled unemployment insurance system that has garnered the most attention. In a widely shared op-ed he wrote for WRAL.com, Quinterno argued that Republican lawmakers have stripped that system of its capacity to deliver meaningful aid to jobless persons and to stabilize the larger economy. News and Views producer Clayton Henkel caught up with Quinterno recently to get more details on this sobering assessment and his take on what lawmakers ought to do to repair the damage.
Well, John, thanks again for joining us on News and Views.
Well, thank you, Clayton. Always happy to chat with you.
You know, when this year started, I can't imagine that anyone could have predicted that we would see North Carolina's jobless numbers rise this high or this quickly.
No. I mean, definitely at the start of the year, unemployment in North Carolina was quite low. I do think the unemployment rate is a bit misleading and wasn't giving the full picture of how poorly our state recovered from the Great Recession. But definitely, you could say we were recovering. But jump ahead a couple of months, get to the outbreak of the COVID crisis, and suddenly we have seen huge increases in joblessness in the state, really just since the middle of March. And those numbers have spiked by one measure. If you just look at based on claims for unemployment insurance in the state, we've had about 580,000 claims since the 15th of March. And as of the beginning of April 13th or 14th, that's huge. If you put all those people together, that would be more people than live in Raleigh. They're born the second most populous city in the state. And all of those folks have essentially been displaced in not even a month.
And as you noted in a recent editorial, many individuals in our state may find that they don't even qualify for the state's jobless benefits. I'm thinking about independent contractors or people who are involved in what we've come to know as the gig economy.
While so many people have applied for benefits in North Carolina, they've done so because of the magnitude of the job losses and also because, you know, all these issues around the federal stimulus package that passed provide a lot of additional aid, potentially. All that late aid, though, is built upon the foundation of the state's unemployment insurance system. And a lot of people are going to find out that some workers traditionally are categorically ineligible, like independent contractors or gig economy workers, though there is some potential change there for them. But even those who are normally eligible will find that because of the way our system was reformed in 2013, it's very unlikely that they will meet either the monetary or non-monetary eligibility criteria needed to qualify in the first place. And that's especially likely for lower-wage workers who have more erratic earnings histories.
Well, before we talk about the Federal CARES Act, let's set the stage by talking a little bit about North Carolina's current unemployment system. It doesn't really offer what one would consider to be generous benefits.
Correct. And that was really a direct function of the legislation that was enacted in 2013 by the general legislature and signed into effect by Governor McCrory, which really was designed to make the system stingy. We'd always previously ranked sort of middle in the pack in terms of benefit adequacy. But now, right now in North Carolina, if you were to qualify for unemployment insurance, you would receive a very modest benefit. The average benefit at the end of last year was only about $275 a week. You would only receive those for 12 weeks as opposed to the standard of 26, which is common in most of the country. And even if you qualified for the most, we have to put a flat cap in. The most you would get is $350 a week. There are also all sorts of requirements about work search and getting a job as quickly as possible and accepting any job. So our system really doesn't have the ability to accommodate many people. If they do manage to qualify, they're not going to get very much for very long compared to unemployed workers in the rest of the country. And our system just doesn't have the ability to respond to a crisis of this magnitude.
And the CARES Act, the federal act that listeners may have heard of, that offers a boost. I believe it's $600 a week, but there are still limits to how many weeks of benefits that a jobless worker will be able to collect.
Right. And so in the CARES Act, there were really three strands that relate to unemployment insurance. One of them was to supplement the weekly benefit by $600 a week, though that is only for weeks of benefits through the end of July. So if this goes on longer, the project would sunset. And it also allows people then potentially to claim an additional 13 weeks of benefit above their state's maximum, which again in North Carolina is 12, so plus 13 would, doing some math right now, would get you up to 35 weeks, which would be much less than you would get in a state that has the more standard 26 weeks of benefits.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the recommendations that you believe the legislature should enact. You say that eligibility criteria should be loosened to make the system more responsive. Tell us more about that idea.
There are some ideas, Clayton, about making some temporary changes just for COVID, but I think deeper structural reforms would be needed, and this might be the time to take that on. And one is the unemployment insurance system was established in the 1930s, and it was still based predominantly on the idea of a manufacturing economy where people were working on a more permanent basis for that kind of employer. The system, even before the state reformed it in 2013, really was not very well suited for an economy that was increasingly contingent, increasingly low wage, and had employment relationships that are not as long term as they might have been in one type. So I think you're going to see, for example, that, you know, we deliberately have shut down our food service industry in North Carolina, and particularly restaurants. And I think an awful lot of those folks who have been laid off from those jobs are going to find that they do not actually meet benefit criteria and will not qualify for benefits. That's something that needs to be addressed. Same way you mentioned earlier, traditionally independent contractors, self-employed, gig economy workers are categorically ineligible, so they couldn't qualify for unemployment insurance, even if they did lose their job. Those types of things need to get fixed.
What else would you recommend that lawmakers take on in this upcoming session?
I do think the benefit formulas and amounts are grossly inadequate and need to be revisited. We definitely, as part of that 2013 reform, put things in place such as benefit calculation formulas that are designed to minimize the amount that's paid out. The fact that we artificially capped the benefit at $350 a week as opposed to letting it move in conjunction with wage growth, as used to be the case, is a big problem. And it doesn't really provide adequate wage replacement for workers in normal times. That $600 a week supplement from the feds will help in the short term, but the system is still fundamentally broken and needs to be addressed going forward. I would also say we need to go back to the 26 weeks of duration, which is standard across most of the country, and that we really do need to consider other types of reforms regarding about how we deal with partial claims, detached claims, and maybe the time has finally come to look at taking up some of the federal options and looking at establishing a work-sharing program as has been done elsewhere.
And how would that work-sharing program work for those who may be unfamiliar with that concept?
Basically, there are different models and different states and countries have tried it, but it's essentially a way that people would be able to continue to claim at least partial benefits if their employers are willing to keep them on the payroll and, you know, just spread work out, reduce their hours, but spread it out over more people. And in a situation like this, the goal is to keep people attached to their employer, because keeping folks attached to their employer means that they're in a better position to have their hours increase when the conditions improve. And also, generally speaking, folks who get separated from their employer entirely often have worse labor market outcomes, and it's harder to get reattached to the workforce. But they've been fully terminated as opposed to they continue a working relationship with a particular firm.
You may recall, John, there were a lot of myths about North Carolina's unemployment insurance system. After the Great Recession, there were folks who would suggest that workers were too lazy, that they were perhaps happy to collect a check and not look for work. I even remember one lawmaker who suggested that the benefits were so generous here that there were people perhaps who were moving from other states to collect benefits. And none of that really turned out to be true.
No, but again, I think even before the 2013 changes, our system was ranked fairly middle of the pack in terms of benefit adequacy. And now we are, on many measures, we rank dead last of all the states. So, for example, at the end of last year, only about 10% of unemployed workers actually received unemployment insurance in North Carolina, which was one of the lowest recipiency rates in the country. And our benefits, you know, with a maximum cap of $350 a week, are not all that generous. And back in 2005, the maximum benefit was much higher. We just pay out a lot less. Also, for many families, you know, even the unemployment insurance benefit that they do receive is not very, even under the old system, was not super generous relative to what it costs to raise a family. And on top of it, we know that those benefits tend to have a good countercyclical effect and that people spend them very quickly on necessities. So this idea that the benefits somehow make people not want to work, I think is actually very insulting to folks who have lost a job. But we're already starting to see that argument show up in this debate. Even though the economy has deliberately been put on hold and many employers have been ordered to shut down, you're still starting to see those arguments show up again. And it's completely, in my view, incredible. And it's driven by ideology, not facts on the ground.
I know there's some economists who are already predicting that the global economy is going to contract this year as we determine what the new normal is going to look like. Are we likely to see workers rehired as quickly as they were let go?
That's an open question. And also, I think it's going to depend on what changes consumers make. So, for example, even if you open the economy back up, are people going to want to travel as much as they want to? So if they're not doing business trips or they're not doing personal trips, are hotels going to be able to hire back their workers even if they wanted to? Again, are people going to be more adverse to wanting to be out in public events? Are, you know, if restaurants open, might there be new public health requirements that significantly reduce the seating capacity in restaurants, which means fewer workers are needed? I think it's a very open question about how people's behavior will change, either both because they have less money or because there's still fear of the virus because it's still out there, and also what sort of regulations or public health requirements are put in place for certain industries that might reduce their need for workers.
And I imagine that there's certain segments of the population that could get left behind. I'm thinking about, again, the last recession, where we saw people who were affected more deeply, older workers, perhaps those who were less educated. What are we likely to see this time around?
Oh, that's definitely true. And there's definitely a racial component to it. African-American workers, generally, there's always the line that, you know, when the economy gets a cold, African-American workers get pneumonia, that kind of approach. I think that is true there. I think a lot of our immigrant workforce, of course, will see different challenges. I think young people coming out of school, whether it's high school, going right to work, or college, or community college, there's a lot of evidence that shows that, you know, the labor market conditions when you graduate have a profound impact and shape your entire lifetime's earning trajectory. So all these folks graduating in the spring, whether it's from high school, community college, university, et cetera, are probably going to find that the scars will last with them for their entire working lives.
And so I imagine for lawmakers coming back at the end of April, perhaps one of the best things they could do is put aside any preconceived notions they've had about unemployed workers and what they think the system should be moving forward.
I think unemployment is part of that, Clayton, but I also think we can't just assume that this is temporary and that, you know, there comes a certain day, May 1st, May 15th, June 1st, whatever it is, that we flip a switch and everything goes back to the way it was. And I think our labor market are going to be fundamentally transformed by what we've been through. And I think we need to think about all of our structures and systems related to the labor market. We've needed to do that for years, and we've been very resistant to do that, both Democrats and Republicans and administrations nationally and at the state level. But I think it's time that we really fundamentally need to think about the fact that our labor markets have been radically transformed over the past 40 years, and we actually may want to pay attention to it. What we're doing to face or to meet the realities, both pre-COVID and now whatever's going to happen post-COVID.
John Quinterno is a principal with South by North Strategies based in Chapel Hill. John, it's always a pleasure to talk with you about the economy. We'll do it again soon.
Well, thank you. I always appreciate the invitation, Clayton.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news about COVID-19 at the State Department of Health and Human Services website, ncdhhs.gov. You can also check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.